Hi, thanks for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our look at the incoming Biden administration as he's sworn in as the 46th president of the United States today, taking helm of a nation racked by political division and also the twin crises of COVID-19 and an economic downturn. Joining us now from the U.S., we have John Pang. He's a senior fellow at the Hannah Arendt Center for Politics and Humanities at Bard College in New York. John, good evening. The American media and some pundits have been using what we would say maybe some quasi-religious language to describe this day, you know, that it has symbolic value, that it's a new dawn, it's a new era, you know, the majesty of it. How much does the actual ceremony of the inauguration mean to ordinary Americans? And what would you say for us observers on the outside, what should we be looking at in terms of its significance?
I like that you begin with talking about the sort of religious language, because that's one of the key elements to understand about U.S. politics and why it remains so divided and contentious. This is, of course, overblown language, just as the description of the rioters or protesters, if you will, on January 6th, as a sort of mortal threat, sort of coup, as coup plotters and as terrorists and so on, is overblown. So you know, these things are, this is part of the sort of rhetoric of sacralization of politics and of kind of raising the stakes, you know, making them almost sort of eschatological, sort of this is good versus evil, this is a new era. This is all, you know, in my view, worrying stuff, you know. I think there's reason to be optimistic on reasonable points, but this sort of religious language is part of the, to me, part of what's disturbing about what's going on.
Yeah, on that score, you know, looking at Donald Trump leaving, there's a lot of focus, I think, in the mainstream media in the U.S., at least if we get through CNN and such, on his petulance and on his personality as a person who doesn't care much for tradition and so on and so forth. But, you know, what do you think, you know, sort of peeling away some of this rhetoric, the anti-Trump vilification of Trump kind of rhetoric, what do you see happening in this attitude between Trump on this day?
The attitude between Trump and
sorry, the attitude that Trump has towards this day, and what constituency is he speaking to as he refuses or rejects these traditions?
He appeals to a very large constituency, right? So, of course, almost half of America voted for him. Of course, not all of those are his sort of hardcore base. But we have about 20 to 30% of the population who are highly animated by Trump. He was his language was unrestrained and offensive. Language aside, he represents something, or even sort of with that language, with that sort of convention-defying sort of stance, he stood for a rather serious populist discontent. So, and that's an issue that won't go away over the next 4 years.
Well, I want to ask John what you think Trump's legacy will be in a domestic sense. How do you think Americans will remember Donald Trump? And I'm wondering whether it is too soon to be thinking about what Trump has done, you know, and some, you know, depending on where you're coming from, may be seen as some of his successes during his 4 years.
Let's begin with the easy part, the successes. He hasn't. He's the first president in a long time not to have started a new war. So these are negative ones, right? He hasn't stopped any of the sort of the continuing and perpetual wars of the U.S. And the U.S. has not been has been in a state of a constant, more or less constant war since the war on terror. And in fact, in the entire history of the U.S., you have only 17. It's harder to find those years when it hasn't been at war. Maybe 17 or 21 years, but that you can sort of attribute to Trump. He has, but he will be remembered as one of the worst presidents we've ever had. He is not, objectively speaking, on certain other scores. You know, there are others who have done perhaps even more damage, but the damage to the U.S. Rhetoric, the damage to our perceptions of the U.S. around the world is grave. This is, in my view, not simply damage. This is really Trump is not the disease. He's a symptom of and it should be described. So there's a tendency to want to just forget and scapegoat and put it all on him, but what he reveals with this sort of really sort of offensive and displaced style is something that needs to be looked at. And I don't think the country is doing that yet. Perhaps too
John,
early.
John, if we could look at the incoming Biden administration, the many headlines even before he takes the presidency officially that seems to be pushing the rhetoric of inclusion, many of the many first women, people of color, transgender, yeah, yeah. I think Assistant Secretary of Health, so on and so forth. Is this a continuation of the Obama administration style of governance?
Well, it's very much a restorationist, an Obama restorationist government, right? Build back better. But and by that, they mean trying to go back to 2016. So, and included in that, as you point out, is this a sort of cultural, racial tokenism, of appointing lots of black and brown people to high places, and women. Those are good things. Those are important things and necessary things. But if the Obama administration is anything to go by, that's all you're going to get. So under Right. Obama, there was a sort of again a massive transfer of wealth to the already wealthy, and the prosecution of wars, of even more wars, drone killings, assassinations, and so on. So Obama
Well, you're right, John. I mean, you know, socially, the world has changed in the past 4 years that Biden has left the vice president's office. But also the superpower dynamics, the geopolitical dynamics has changed as well. Where do you see the biggest foreign challenges to Biden's administration coming from? Is it going to come from Russia? Is it going to come from China or the Middle East? Where do you see that the dynamics of where the U.S. will play on the world stage?
So there is the answer to this is okay. There's one is where I see the greatest challenges, and then where the mm-hmm. U.S. sees the greatest. The Biden administration will. To start with the positive again, perhaps the most viable kind of attempt to return to status quo ante, to where things were when the Obama administration left them, would be with Iran. So there's a commitment to rejoin the nuclear disarmament, the sort of JCPOA, the nuclear limitation treaty with Iran. But nevertheless, you're right. Is it possible to go back? The world has changed a lot, and Iran may not be taking that position, may not be as ready this time, may not be as willing. But the greatest threat, sort of being hyped by the administration, is without question China. followed closely by Russia. So there's a huge displacement of threat outwards into China and Russia. And I think the difference with this administration is that they will be able to work better with allies in sort of Europe and in Asia to form coalitions against China and Russia. And this John, is what, you know, going back to our region, John, to Southeast Asia, those will be the issues.
Right.
Yes.
John, should we place too much hope on an America that's going to be an activist one, that's going to be involved in democracy and spreading democracy around the world? All that, is that something of the past? Will we see in a return, an attempt to do that again with the Biden administration?
I'm actually not so keen on the U.S. returning to a kind of liberal interventionist policy, if that's what you mean. So in the Obama and Clinton administrations, you had the sort of Democrat equivalent of the neocons. You had sort of liberal neocons who created a doctrine for intervention, for so-called humanitarian and human rights intervention around the world. So I worry when the U.S. Foreign policy is dictated by so-called democracy and human rights. Not that these are not really important principles, but these are principles that have been securitized and weaponized. So the massive hypocrisy of U.S. foreign policy that people note, especially this year, it comes down to that. Comes down to the application of these principles.
Right. Yeah.
So
John,
I don't know if there
so
will
much.
Be a return. We have some of the personnel from the Obama administration. It is a kind of semi-reboot of the Obama foreign policy.
Right. John, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight.
Yes.
We really appreciate your time and your insights. Thank you. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.